FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.
Welcome. You are listening to the Financial Survival Network. I'm Kerry Lutz. The date is May 9th, 2016. So what new tricks do the central banks have up their sleeves? How are they going to keep you guessing and make you unsure of what the next move is and where the future is heading? Well, that's a good question. And here to answer it is Gordon T. Long, our good friend. Gordon, welcome back.
Kerry, always like and enjoy talking to you, and thank you very much for inviting me back.
Well, so where are we now in the scheme of things here? What do they have up their sleeves, the powers that be?
A lot and more to come. I mean, they're getting even more imaginative. But I think what, and I've been writing about this for a while now, I don't think what a lot of people are paying attention to is what came out of the G20 meeting in Shanghai, China, at the end of February. You know, on the surface, there was nothing, just minimal press announcements. But what happened behind the scenes is the finance central bank members were all there and held some very strong, intense sessions. And it's my opinion that they came away with an accord on what they're doing with the currencies. And the real driving force was they've got to take down the U.S. dollar in the short term and to help in driving, getting the yuan, the Chinese currency, lowered. But they can't allow it to devalue. What they're trying to do is devalue it on a relative basis, really by using forward guidance and expectations. And you've noticed every central bank since then, and I got a list of dates here of each one of them, whether it was the Bank of Japan, whether it was the ECB or the Fed, coming out with announcements that kind of shocked the market, to really kind of caught them off guard with retrenching. And in every case, what it did is it drove up the yen in the value, and everybody was expecting it to fall further. It drove up the euro significantly, like 7 or 8%, in a steady manner with each one of these announcements, and therefore we could have weakened the dollar, but also reduced the yuan, taken some pressures off the Chinese currency, at least in April or March and April. And as we talk today, I think some of there's some real serious pressures that are coming to fore there.
Yeah, I just wonder how it all fits in with the election as well. Is there something going on with that?
Without question.
Yeah.
And I think that's why Yellen, you know, did that surprise trip over to the White House, which is very, very unusual, and called an emergency FOMC meeting, because I think she's got to justify the kind of policies that she's really got herself trapped into. The expectations that we're going to have four rate increases this year, which we're clearly not. We're down to maybe we're going to see one, and even I think that's in question. But the reversal of that, but also some of this agreements that I think that she's been forced to make with the other central banks, because it's a global problem. The U.S., in my mind, is on the verge, if not in a recession. But global trade, Kerry, as you know more than anybody, is in near in total collapse. Mm-hmm. The numbers are staggering. I whether you're talking train traffic, shipping traffic, air transport, trucking traffic, everything is just they're at levels we haven't seen even at the 2007. And eight crisis levels. So it's no question it's slowing down. So anything that she can do is not really about the U.S. economy. It's about globally. And the problem is because the U.S. dollar is just too strong. It's literally strangling the rest of the world. Mm-hmm. You know, and Kerry, there's so many things that we just don't fully appreciate. You know, let's pick an oil, for example. The energy prices, we all know, have fallen down. They're like slight rebounds, and we think how cheap energy is. But that's our perspective in U.S. dollars. If you mm-hmm. don't use U.S. dollars, and you have to use U.S. dollars to buy energy with the petrol agreement, oil has got very, very expensive for you to buy, right, unless you're an oil-producing country, and then you're getting killed.
Yeah.
And by the way, you have your country currency typically pegged to the U.S. dollar. Most of them do. So your current account's getting killed. So it's not helping them in any way. But the rest of the world it's got very, very expensive. So here you got slowing economy. Their costs are going up. Mm-hmm. And even the commodity prices, I don't know if you've noticed them, Kerry. We're on the verge of some fairly significant breakouts in commodities in the food sector.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying it's broken out yet, but it's right at the cusp, mm-hmm. which is sending some pretty big signals here. So they've got to get this dollar down. But, you know, it's my opinion. They may be successful in the short term, but longer term, this dollar is still going much, much higher. And it's not that I believe the dollar is the place to be because of strength. It's more of a flight to safety. It'll be the last currency to fall because there's no place else to hide, if you would.
Yeah. What do you think about the way they've devalued the yuan, though? It just seems to be haphazard. Yeah.
That's the problem with even everything I've said. They have achieved weakness in the dollar and the strength in the yen and the euro, but the yuan has not devalued. And you saw last Monday, week ago Monday, the Chinese are getting impatient. I think at the Shanghai meeting, they probably gave them the other members till maybe May 1st or something early May to do something because they're out of runway and they're starting to react. Their loyalty is to try and save their economy, and there's no question they're facing, you know, a hard landing here. Capital is fleeing China right now, and I use that word strongly, fleeing. I mean, I just saw the International Investment Finance Committee group calling $450 billion more of capital outflow from China this year. These are big numbers.
That's escalating.
Just, by the way, take a trip up the West Coast into Vancouver or someplace in Western Canada. I mean, the money coming in there and the housing, mm-hmm. they're bidding them up by millions of dollars on houses. Money can't come in any faster, and it's fleeing. That's what's going on.
Yes.
Yeah, because in China, they know, you know, you don't have to talk to very many people and walk around the ghost cities. So much is built on non-performing loans, and it's now reached the point of it's non-performing.
Yeah.
These are a lot of frightening events that are going on here in parallel.
When do you think the Chinese get to the point where they really have to address those non-performing loans?
Well, they'll put it off as long as they have, but they're beginning to see it right now.
Yeah.
And I think we're in the middle of it. They'll play some more games, but you know, it's that old Will Rogers bankruptcy. You know, it happened quite slowly, then suddenly.
Yeah.
So it just keeps sneaking up on them. And they've got so much malinvestment and so many bad loans in all sectors. Just the way the economy has been built. I'm not being down on China. I think China's actually got a very strong future, because it's got the capital to weather the storm, if it handles it well. But I think their issue is actually going to be one of political and social unrest, because China, people expect the government to supply them a job, but they're not. They're becoming uncompetitive on a pricing basis. Yeah. A lot of the businesses are going into other parts of Asia right now because it's a better cost. It's better cost effectiveness, and certainly automation is coming, and it has to. And so you've typically had, you know, upwards of 50 million people leaving the rural areas, going into the cities looking for jobs, and now that's slowing down to maybe 25 million. But just think of those numbers, Kerry. Mm-hmm. And I live up here staggering. In Boston. That's 5 to 10 Bostons a year. You got to find jobs.
Yeah.
And you can't do this when you're fighting this kind of technology advancement and the labor arbitrage around the world outside of China. They're getting beat the same way that we got industry taken from us. It's now happening in China. And with China being the second largest country in the world, this is a destabilizing factor, especially when the U.S. has slowed to the point that we have, because the middle class, as you well know, is just completely tapped out. So mm-hmm. I can't find the engine of growth. That's my problem. But the debt just keeps growing.
Yeah, the debt keeps rolling along, increasing geometrically. And it's one thing when growth was happening arithmetically, but when you have negative growth, when you have actual economic contraction, that's when the cracks in the system really start to make themselves known.
Yeah, and where, you know, what happens is productivity starts to fall off because the debt is no longer being put into productive assets. We financialize; it's all staying within the financial industry. It's not going out to build top line growth. We all know that. But at some point, you literally eat your seed corn and you don't have any more corn to plant the fields. And so the productivity is falling off. When productivity in the developed world falls off, in spite of the advancements in technology and robotics. But if you're not as industrialized as you were, you're not getting the same bang for your buck, especially if you're a services industry on a relative basis. So the productivity is not increasing. If productivity doesn't increase, standard of livings don't go up. And we all know standards of living have been in real troubles. But we're seeing real cracks that are particularly troubling to me because, you know, we've been talking about problems here for 2 or 3 years and they've been getting worse. But the two that I'm really noticing, you know, what's been holding up this market has been buybacks, right? Everybody's fleeing the market, but corporations keep buying back all these shares. But what's happening now is cash flows are finally falling off. EBITDA is absolutely coming down in the S&P 500. Yeah. When cash flows come down and your debt's up, your credit ratings get taken down and money becomes more expensive. It's difficult to do it. You just don't have the cash. You're even borrowing at a higher level. This is going to send in the next quarter, not this quarter, second quarter in June, we're going to see it. I think in the July and August, we're really going to start to feel this buyback pressures. And the other thing is, I don't know if you've noticed life insurance companies, the amount of redemptions that they're sending to the hedge funds. I saw last week 5 different MetLife served a notice of $1.8 billion of redemptions to their hedge funds. And you can go through them. All of them are 1.8. AIG served notice on $4 billion because the hedge funds are just not producing. They're actually costing them money. Some of the hedge funds are folding, as you've seen. Yeah. But when they withdraw, when these pensions and the CalPERS and the CalSTARS, when they would withdraw the money from the hedge fund, that comes out of the equity market, right? Mm-hmm. So that's where the hedge funds are typically in invested. And what I really see is, so what are they going to do with that money when they get it back as redemption? They're talking about putting it in private placements. That's not the equity markets. That's not the bond market. No. So this is a subtle shift. And I did a lot of work with Amin Rajan in Europe, and he surveyed 184 pension plans throughout Europe. And what he found consistently is that they can't hedge properly anymore because of the nature of the market. And so that was how, you know, they would buy and hold for a long period of time in most of the pension plans and insurance mm-hmm. companies. So they can't do that effectively. So what they're having to do is kind of risk on, risk off in the market. So their whole changing strategy really reflects what I just said that we're seeing with the life insurance companies on the redemptions.
Yeah.
So there's a shifting way to protect yourself, especially when these companies live on yield and they're not getting the yield at all. They're trying to save themselves. That I think that these are the headwinds that in the next 3 to 4 months, we're really going to feel it. I think we're going to feel weakening beginning in May and picking up speed as we go into the summer because of these two driving forces. Does that make sense to you? Yeah, are you saying the same thing?
I mean, we know about the hedge fund redemptions, although it was kind of anecdotal up until recently. And we see it with Wall Street profits down, banks taking a hit. There's a trend. There's something going on out there, trend, and it's not positive, that's for sure. But
It hasn't been positive for some time. Yeah. But you know, the central banks just have had ability to just keep kicking the can down the road and just keeping the markets elevated. And I guess we should say thank goodness, because mm-hmm. when they crack, this could be very seriously ugly because of the amount of leverage. That's in the system. If collateral values were to fall to any lower level, I would say even 15% down, it could just get totally out of control, which is very worrisome. But the longer they drag it on, the worse the malinvestment, the lack of price discovery, the mispricing of risk. These things just continue to get worse and worse. But don't be surprised what they'll do. The central banks to keep the status quo going.
Oh, for sure. Well, it's getting interesting real fast here, and we're going to find out the ability of the central banks to actually control the course of events when it really gets down to it. Will they absolutely lose control, or will they be able to influence it? Not necessarily be in control, but at least control the pace of the movement downward and the damage. That's what's going to be interesting. I don't know the answer.
It's all right if it's a single country. And you could, you know, like when we had it in 2007, 2008, the Fed could come back out with their various stability programs that they had. But when it's across central banks, trying to get them to be coordinated, because there's always somebody that loses, and do it quickly is the issue. So the complexity just goes up exponentially. And I don't believe they've got their act together in a coordinated fashion. I mean, even the Shanghai Accord, you can tell it's loosey goosey, and it's not like the Plaza Accord back in 1985 that was orchestrated with the Treasury. It's different this time. And
really,
you know, there's like honor amongst thieves. Right, until something gets bad, and then they don't protect their own. So if things get ugly, they'll protect their own, as opposed to working to try and solve it. That's the frightening part about this next problem, because it's going to be global in nature. I think I'm stating the obvious, but obviously, maybe sometimes the obvious is the thing we really need to look at.
Absolutely. Well, Gordon, on that note, tell us where we find you, where we can watch your videos, and learn more about what you're doing.
Well, thank you very much, Gary. Financial Repression Authority, GordonTLong.com, Triggers.ca. We've all sorts of various interviews that we talk to people, different people, some of them same people as yourself, Kerry, and we try and put our conclusions together in these various sites.
Absolutely. Well, Gordon, thank you so much. As always, you'll find a link to Gordon's site in the show notes to this interview on financialsurvivalnetwork.com. Take a look at it. To many of you out there, it's your go-to place every morning. We've got news from all around the globe dealing with exactly these issues, the issues that the mainstream totally ignores and attempts to sweep under the rug until it's too late for you. Gordon, we will talk to you again. Be well.
Thanks, Kerry. Appreciate it. Talk to you again.
FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.